That's between the owner that car
and the guy who owned it.
And the guy who owned it too. Mm-hmm. Now, does that affect the peace and dignity of the people of the state of Oregon? In the same sense as does the result of a gunfight?
In the sense of when the dealer sells a car to a purchaser, and the purchaser moves the car outside of the county or state or whatever the statute says, when he's not supposed to, and the dealer might not get paid. Here, the owner loans it to his friend with the implied condition that his friend isn't going to reloan it to somebody that the owner hasn't exercised his judgment as to whether he wants that third person to have it. He's done the same kind of a wrong to the owner of the car as had been done to the dealer of the cars. It's the same kind. Maybe there's a difference in degree.
Suppose the fellow takes a watch from Weisfield's on $1 down and $100 when you catch me, and then he takes it to the pawn shop and hocks it and doesn't show up again for 6 months. He has done what we're talking about here.
No, he hasn't.
Yes.
No, because it says under an agreement the same will be returned to the owner at a future time.
Yeah. That's obtaining money by false pretenses.
Under such agreement, he pledges it.
Unless the conditional sale of the watch might have had it in the condition that if a payment was not made in the first of the next month, the watch would be returned to the seller.
Now, the model penal code doesn't have this, does it? New York does. We don't have any present statutory provision for this, do we?
Larceny by Bailey?
Which would be different. An intent. There'd be an intent to steal.
I think there has to be an accompanying intent, an intent to deprive, withhold, appropriate.
By Bailey, isn't that you don't keep and retain and return the property in accordance with the nature of the trust? Remember, those were the nature of the trust. That's itself one of those statutes.
That's the march of my
Bailey. And that's what this is. You're borrowing some property, and you don't keep it in accordance with the nature of the trust. Owner here.
Well, larceny by Bailey requires evidence of proof of intent, doesn't it?
The Supreme Court is so held. Yes.
This doesn't require proof of intent.
And it isn't called theft either.
No, but it is called criminal.
Mm-hmm. What is the intent purpose of this? What's the reason for that?
It's to encourage fidelity among friends.
Well, it's the purpose is the same as the purpose of the theft statute, and that's protection of property interests.
You sure it isn't designed to placate Dez Connell?
No.
Okay.
I haven't even talked to Dez Connell about it.
Well, I can see this happening over and over.
Is this the word loans in there, the main thing that bothers?
Loans does bother, yes. I think if we limit it to what Kathleen's initial impression of it was, that is, as so far as encumbering is concerned, it limits its application, does away with the business about loaning among friends, except for consideration, and makes it more palatable to me. But here's why I'm concerned about some of these things. I can just see the police and the district attorneys being run ragged investigating cases which do nothing except consume their time and take them off things that are more important.
Yeah, but one of the nagging problems is a larceny by Bailey statute that won't work. Because
that's right.
your besiegers, this sort of thing. If you have no solutions, then that means that you have to tell how many people a day that you can't do anything to help them, and there has been a crime. And in your own mind, you realize that there's a crime here. There are so many people who come to your door every day and say, "Help me on this," and you say, "I'm sorry, the regular law doesn't cover anything like that."
Well, I thought that when we went over our theft statute, that we made it broad enough to cover all larceny by Bailey situations.
I think it is broad enough to cover larceny.
And here's another. And now, many times, when we were drafting that, we said, "Well, we're going to come to a misapplication of property statute." I think this is.
My feeling is we don't need this.
Well, maybe we ought to chew up that ground again and see what we're talking about when we said we're going to catch that when we get to this one.
Let's Don review the section of the. Of the comprehensive theft statute that covers larceny by Bailey. Just for a minute. We just will do it now. We're going to be. My thought all along has been that we haven't needed it. We don't need this. I mean, since we were been considering this, I thought you were for it.
No, I wasn't for it, but I wanted to discuss it before I came to a conclusion.
Well, you know what I think? I think we ought to, before we abandon this, I think we ought to talk some, we ought to have some people, expert in the field, look at what we've done with the other statute, the test statute, and then see if they think we need this. Because there's so many
things. If in the other statutes we have covered what used to be larceny by Bailey, I don't think we need this.
I'd agree with that.
Let's hit that now, Don.
I'd agree with that.
Well, section 2 of preliminary draft number 4. Person commits theft when, with intent to deprive another of property. And of course, deprive has been defined, either withhold or dispose of the property. And, or to appropriate. And appropriate means to exercise control over property of another for so extended a period of, or under such circumstances as to acquire the major portion of the economic value or benefit of such property. He takes, appropriates, obtains, or withholds such property from the owner thereof. Well, I think that language there would cover larceny by Bailey.
I don't think it would cover the part of larceny by Bailey that's that I recited a while ago about according to the nature of his trust.
Well, it would cover the act which would amount to stealing of the property.
Mm-hmm. And here, this new one gets at the risk that the guy might be damaged.
But isn't that fairly well naked and try to defense, but if the risk does not occur, then yeah, the
that moves out, the whole crime moves out. Ab initio.
More look at that defense.
Ex post facto.
Well, all that's intended to do, of course, is to, it's saying in effect that if the parties are where they were originally, if the status quo has been restored, there's no basis for the prosecution.
Yeah. What I'm afraid is that they'll grab this and put it in the whole criminal statute.
Back shortly.
Mm-hmm. And if they do,
we're just about finished with this now.
Well.
I'm yet to swing over because I can see some danger in this.
I think you have one hell of a time preparing to fight.
Yeah.
Under this is not.
Well, I'm not that wrapped up in this thing, but I did think that it was something we ought to take a look at.
Well, let's do it this way.
Let's leave it in and put it in practice. Tell the full committee, well, that is our recommendation, that it be.
Yeah.
Of course, that gets into a lot. No, we ought to make the decisions ourselves.
Yeah, I agree.
Rather than to do what we did on that other. My belief is that I would vote to believe it. That's my vote. What do you think?
Well, unless there's, as long as the larceny by Bailey thing is covered in the other, I agree. I go along. I can't think of any good reason to have it. Unless you can convince me, Don.
Well, I said about all I can think to say about it. Like I say, I felt that there was a good chance that there would be the type of disposition made of the property that would not amount to either depriving or appropriating.
Yeah.
And that perhaps that kind of use of property of another, even though it might not amount to theft, should be.
Well, let's just keep this, hold this back, and I'm sure that when we come up with a complete draft, somebody will be wounded, and we'll have it right in to say, here it is.
You agree, Bruce?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But you want to take it out for now?
I think
not
so.
Even put it in brackets. I would
agree
with that.
I think we should take it
out. And it's out unless
you
somebody
like
wants
it
to reconsider
you don't
it.
Like
we'll
it.
Kind of keep it in mind.
Yeah, let's take it out if you don't like it.
Okay. Let's take it out and not and make the decisions ourselves and not clutter up the full committee.
Yeah.
Because
we can either give them a recommendation or
not. Yeah, I agree.
We'll have a ready answer. If they find a loophole, we have a ready answer here. Because this certainly plugs the holes. I don't like those defenses.
Here we are. We covered really three-fourths of our agenda today. We haven't got to burglary yet. I think it's desirable to keep meeting in 2 or 3 week intervals if it's not too oppressive, or at least the rest of you. Don check with you for your schedule?
Yeah.
Maybe we can have
I've got a, first week in June, but maybe not that Saturday.
Well, I'll be gone all the first of June.
The whole
from the 1st of June through the following weekend.
You will.
I'll be gone. I'm going to get a vacation. I'm going to take it.
Okay.
Full vacation.
Well, Don will check, see how Bob Chandler's condition is, and be getting in touch. Maybe we can meet the next time in Portland. And is Friday as good as Saturday?
No.
Usually, I mean, there's more chance that I get tied up on Friday than Saturday, but if I'm not tied up on Friday, I'd lots rather meet on Friday than Saturday.
Friday is worse for you, Ed, than Saturday.
It's just $40 out of my pocket, that's all.
Okay, you call me now.
Okay,
thanks very much.
The first week in June, when I'm pretty well available, you know,
fitting up. Great. Well,
I wonder for our next meeting.
Patrick is separating his legal, just the labor portion and the material portion. Then the labor will stick, the materials will fail. He pulled me a book.
In order, and I didn't receive minutes of the last meeting. Did you receive them, Ed?
Oh, I think I did, but I can't find them. I can't find them anyway.
And you received yours?
No, I guess I didn't.
Okay. There's something in the mail, but I can't locate it.
I really kind of hate it. I hate to take the time to go over
this. Yeah, I remember what we did.
And if there isn't any objection, we'll just defer action on the minutes so we can move along. Good enough. And then later, when each of you have an opportunity to read them, if you have any corrections or additions, we'll move on at that time. Now, I want to welcome Justice Sloan back with us today, our faithful guiding light. We're going to go now to Theft of Services Preliminary Drafts 2, 2A and B. And in that connection, have the members receive the preliminary drafts to and so on for the meeting today. You did receive
them. Well, it's not in text, is it?
No. One afternoon.
Well, I didn't receive mine either, but
I don't think we're getting the promptness of delivery through the post office department that we should.
No, we mailed them out.
We had the same trouble prior to the last.
Oh, you mailed them Thursday. No, I got this first week.
I haven't gotten anything
since Thursday.
I haven't either. I think maybe there's so much junk mail going in toward election time
that they didn't have to send that to
you. Well, now you have copies of these drafts, don't you, in your books?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in our books. So, let's go then to preliminary draft number 2 for Theft of Services.
Now, what I'm trying to do here is to, in accordance with the wishes of the subcommittee expressed at the last meeting, put down 3 separate alternatives to this Theft of Services section. Now, preliminary draft number 2. The definition of services is contained in subsection 1, incorporating the amendments that were adopted by the subcommittee. Services includes, but is not limited to, labor, professional services, toll facilities, transportation, telephone or other communication service, supplying of food, lodging, or other accommodation in hotels, restaurants, or elsewhere, supplying of equipment for use, supplying of commodities of public utility nature, such as gas, electricity, steam, and water. Now, the new language in that subsection, toll facilities is new, communications service, following telephone is new. The language supplying of food, lodging, or other accommodations, is new. And we have transposed the location of the subsection from what it was in the first draft, and have the definition now in subsection 1. subsection 2B has language that is different from preliminary draft.
Could I make Patrick a question?
Yes.
In
didn't put in entertainment, did you?
Not in this draft, no.
I think it was just an inadvertent.
Yeah, omission. I think that's right. That because there wasn't any action taken to.
No, we kept it in. Actually, after the elsewhere.
Yeah, there should be entertainment in there. That's correct.
After the elsewhere, accommodations in hotels, restaurants, or elsewhere should insert entertainment. Okay, go ahead, Don.
Now, sub 2B.
2A is exactly as we changed, right?
Yes, right. Yes, now that's with intent to. In the first draft, we had, of course, under sub 1, a person commits theft if he obtains services which are available only for compensation by force, threat, except for other means to avoid payment for the service. This language conforms now to the amendments adopted by the subcommittee, where we have the intent to avoid payment stated under sub 2A. With intent to avoid payment, therefore, he obtains services which are available for compensation by force, threat, deception, or other means. Or, and then sub 2B.
I know we had ordinarily available.
No.
I'm wondering if.
We had ordinarily, that language appeared.
Down in the prima facie evidence.
Yeah, that was under that. And this sub 2B, which appeared as 1B before in preliminary draft number 1, we had language having control over labor in the employ of another person or of business, commercial, or industrial equipment or facilities of another person. This incorporates the new language suggested by the subcommittee, which deletes in the employ, the language in the employ. Now, in sub 3 is where the word ordinarily and the draft appeared before. Now, in drafting this draft, I have used the word customarily because we had some discussion about ordinarily before, and I thought I would insert that and see what the actually, the definition of both of these is pretty much the same, customarily and ordinarily.
I like customarily better.
But seem to be customarily might be a little more explicit. And that, I think, that pretty well covers the differences between draft number 2 and preliminary draft number 1.
But I suggest that we go ahead and go through the next two proposed drafts before we get into the discussion. However, so why don't you go ahead and point out the difference.
Now, number 2A is the same as preliminary draft number 2, with the exception of subsection 3. And subsection 3 uses the language that now appears in our defrauding an innkeeper statute, ORS 165.230. And this is the draft that was suggested at the subcommittee that we attempt to use the same language with respect to the prima facie evidence provisions that we now have in our present statute. This language is taken directly from the ORS 165.230 and would expand the prima facie provisions considerably from what we have either preliminary draft number 1 or preliminary draft number 2.
Okay, I'll write that. Responding to number 3 on the first one. comments too narrowly.
Of course, this covers, as you can see, quite a number of things. False pretense or sure pretense is fictitious, rented baggage or other property. Refused or neglected to pay for food, lodging, or other accommodation on demand. Person withdrew and gave a payment. The person absconded without paying or offering to pay for such food, lodging, or the person surreptitiously removed or attempted to remove his baggage.
Is that language taken verbatim from 165.230?
Yes, it is.
This has had the touch of fire for a long time. This is all right right now.
Let's go on. It isn't the kind of statute where you'll find a lot of cases, reported cases on it.
We usually don't get the Supreme Court.
No.
I was going to say Ralph Lemon had never been convicted of the fraud he did people. Go ahead.
Now, 2B is the third and final alternative. And this is in line with the New York penal law. And enumerates the different types of situations in which, and is more explicit and definitive with respect to the particular types of situations covered. Subsection 1, with intent to avoid payment for restaurant services or for services rendered to him as a transient guest at a hotel, motel, inn, tourist cabin, rooming house, or comparable establishment, avoids or attempts to avoid payment by unjustifiable failure or refusal to pay, by stealth, or by any misrepresentation of fact which he knows to be false. Person who fails or refuses to pay for such services is presumed to have intended to avoid payment, therefore. With intent to obtain railroad, bus, air, taxi, or any other public transportation service without payment of the lawful charge for such transportation service which has been rendered to him, he obtains such service or avoids payment, therefore, by force, threat, deception, or by justifiable failure or refusal to pay. Or 3, with intent to avoid payment by himself or another person of the lawful charge for any telecommunication service, he obtains such service or avoids payment therefore by himself or another person by means of A, tampering or making connection with the equipment of the supplier, whether by mechanical, electrical, acoustical, or other means, or B, any misrepresentation of fact which he knows to be false, or any other artifice, trick, deception, code, or device. Or obtaining or having control over labor in the employ of another person or of business, commercial, or industrial equipment or facility of another person, knowing that he is not entitled to the use thereof, and with intent to derive a commercial or other substantial benefit for himself or a third person, he uses or diverts to the use of himself or third person such labor, equipment, or facilities. Now this is lifted directly from the New York penal law. Our preliminary draft, number one, used quite a bit of the language from the New York penal law, but in a more general sense, such as the Model Penal Code or the Michigan Code. And this was the, I can't recall who had suggested we do this at the last subcommittee, but this was one of the alternatives that was discussed, that we might try this, see how that looked. I think one of the objections was that it was too broad in general the way we had drafted before, and this certainly lays it out more explicitly.
Well, let's hear the comments. What does the subcommittee think with, as between the three proposed drafts? First of all, let me ask this. Does preliminary draft 2 conform with our recommendations as to the amendment of preliminary draft number 1? I think it does.
I think I'm a little concerned about professional services. I think Bruce probably is too, aren't you? I'm limited to labor professional services, told us that he's one.
Did I say I was?
I don't know. I thought maybe you were, but your comments last time. We discussed that quite a bit, you know, and I just wonder if we really wanted to say that.
Yeah, I think I didn't express some doubt as to the need for it.
I think with labor, I think you're all right on that. Because labor isn't such an obvious commodity, but professional services.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Don. Since the last meeting, I've looked over New York Model Penal Code, Michigan, and Connecticut. Every one of these has professional services in there.
Yes, including and also the Model Penal Code.
Yeah, and the Model Penal Code. I recall we discussed it. I didn't. There was some discussion last time as to whether or not this would lend itself toward imprisonment for debt.
Yeah.
But
that's been the experience in the other states. Any comments on that?
Any commentary?
There's commentary with respect to that section in the Model Penal Code, but it's prospective type of commentary. It doesn't give you any help in knowing about the application of such a provision. And there's no question about it that this type of language is certainly an expansion of our present law. I mean, we don't have anything like this in our present law.
I can't imagine the specific professional service that I would take a guy out of jail for not paying for it. If he doesn't pay the dancer, if he doesn't pay the lawyer, if he doesn't pay the prostitute. I can't imagine him doing that.
I wonder if hospitals ever get caught for this kind of thing.
That's why it's possible.
They sure work to get your money.
It's not like getting a passport just to get in.
Well, they have a remedy. They have a civil remedy. It's pretty good.
Oh, sure.
File a lien. They can file a lien that usually works.
A lien on what?
Well, they can file this medical lien.
Oh, yes, in automobile accident cases, they have a lien.
Yeah.
No, they have an arrest? No, if you go up there for appendicitis or something.
Yeah.
No, they wouldn't have a lien that I know of in a lot of cases. I suppose a lot of people intend to avoid whatever they can avoid.
Yeah.
So I was thinking more of the use of phony Medicare cards or hospital cards.
Yeah.
I think this, I think there, you would have a definite intent to fraud. I think the intent to fraud.
It's
not the kind of thing that you can imagine someone staying up at night wondering how I'm going to get into the hospital by forging a Medicare card.
Maybe you're all right.
I had some questions about it, and then when I noticed all the other drafts had it, I thought, well, there must have been a good reason for it, and I figured that probably in commentary somewhere there was some discussion of it. So I was prepared to let it go by. let's not give up on this point, though.
And of course, we want to add entertainment in too, if we've
done. Yeah, we want to entertain you. Let me ask this question. While Donnie's trying to find the commentary on the confessional service. And maybe this is where Kathleen Buffet should be here, but
she's on vacation, by the way. That's why she isn't here this week.
In the Connecticut draft, they limit that. They say service includes. As used in this section, service includes, but is not limited to. Now, they say labor, professional service, etc., transportation service, etc. Now, do you think that language is better than services?
We've got a sensor down here after communication.
Yeah, we do. We say, so we have to make this consistent. We say professional services, and then we say communication service. And I frankly don't know which is proper or best. But what do you think? It's used in the section. I'm inclined to think maybe the service would be better. And I don't know. Maybe not. Any other thoughts? Should we leave that up to legislative council? Okay.
I think services is a good word in mind with what the term is usually used.
Okay, well, with that in mind, should we change communications, services, or just service?
Well, I would think it'd be a good idea that it would be consistent throughout, whether we use the singular or the plural.
Communications. Services. Let's, if you could make a note to bring this to the attention of the Legislative Council and to request their help, and whatever decision you make, make the use of that term consistently.
Yeah, you see, the Model Penal Code says in their definition, services includes labor, professional service, singular, telephone or other public service.
Services includes service, in other words.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's consistent.
Yeah. So, our definition under, say, preliminary draft number 2, for example, we define services as including
professional
services.
Mark the S off of professional services.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Haven't found it.
Yes, I've got the commentary here in preliminary draft number 2. Now,
you're relating to professional services.
Well, relating to this whole area. Now, their preliminary draft number 2 differs from their proposed official draft of Model Penal Code in its language to a certain extent. The thrust of it is pretty much the same, although 206.7 under preliminary draft number 2. Used the language in subsection 1. A person commits theft if he obtains the labor or service of another person by deception or intimidation. knowing that the provision of such labor or service is part of the calling or business of the person providing it. See why they changed that. And then a person, under sub 2, a person commits theft if having control over distribution of labor or service of others. And then sub 3 goes into transportation telephone service. And utilities. Now, it says under commentary, subsection 1 is substantially a new rule in Anglo-American law. There is widespread legislation imposing minor penalties for particular instances of cheating and obtaining service. For example, obtaining service from hotels and restaurants without intent to pay, dropping slugs in coin machines. But in general, it is no crime to induce a doctor, architect, engineer, or lawyer by false representations to render services since no, quote, property, unquote, is obtained. So, you can certainly see from that comment that they were attempting to cover professional services.
Read it again, Don.
There is widespread legislation imposing minor penalties for particular instances of cheating and obtaining service. For example, obtaining service from hotels and restaurants without intent to pay, or dropping slugs in coin machines. But in general, it is no crime to induce a doctor, architect, engineer, or lawyer by false representations to render services since no property is obtained. Now, that is...
That was their commentary to the draft, which said service includes labor or the service of another.
Labor or service of another, yes.
And then they subsequently changed that service of another to professional service, didn't they?
Yes.
And they also qualified their commentary by saying, in general, it's not a crime to obtain. They don't say part blank that it's not a crime, they just say in general it's not a crime.
Well, it would seem from that comment that that was the intent of their draft here, draft number 2, was to cover that type of service. I mean, that would be my interpretation.
Cover the profession?
Yes.
The hypothetical that Justice Sloan raised, I think, is legitimate.
If you're bringing in a phony Medicare or Medicare card, why you should be prosecuted for it.
But I'm wondering, if I came to Providence Hospital with a phony Medicare card and received 3 weeks of treatment, would our previous theft statute that we've drawn cover that? Obtaining by false pretenses.
Obtaining property by false pretenses?
I didn't obtain property, did I? I didn't obtain any money.
No.
Yeah,
I don't think it would be.
And we're going to do away with common law fraud, aren't we? Even if that might not even apply anyway.
I don't think it hurts you anyway, but it is. It would technically cover a lot of things that nobody much would want to prosecute for.
Now, here's some additional comment from the preliminary draft number 1 of the Model Penal Code, in which they cite an Oregon Supreme Court case, State versus Miller. But would you like to hear that comment also with respect to this professional services?
Yeah.
The limitation of the common law and ordinary false pretense legislation to theft of property left many forms of wealth unprotected. Thus, the 1951 decision of the Supreme Court of Oregon reversed a conviction under the false pretense statute on the ground that the only thing secured by defendant's deception was a guarantee of his indebtedness. And the court reviewed precedents dealing with extension of time on indebtedness, renewal of a note, the execution of a lease, the furnishing of food and lodging. Obtaining labor or professional services by fraud is not punished. This problem has been attacked by statutes in half a dozen jurisdictions, bringing labor or services generally within the protection of the false pretense sanctions by a great mass of special legislation dealing with particular kinds of services. In addition, there is widespread legislation making it criminal to obtain credit or to procure a signature or other execution of defined classes of documents by fraud.
My thought is that it doesn't hurt anything to leave it in, particularly in view of the fact that the trend seems to be to leave it in. And I think that the final commentary, if we conclude that it should be left in, I think the final commentary should state that the attorney's fees and the doctor's fees and such things as that ordinarily aren't within the purview of this. Or you could just say aren't within the purview, period. But then when you get into
they are by this definition.
I'm afraid we might be misstating ourselves.
Yeah.
Unless you wanted to remove professional services from the definition. Don't you think that that
would
mean that?
just strike what I said on the record.
Professional services other than medical or legal.
What's the wish of the subcommittee? All in favor of leaving professional services in, say aye.
Aye, in view of the fact that it's been left in various other high class studies. If it wasn't for that, I would say leave it out.
All right, opposed. Nobody's opposed, so we'll leave it in. Now, let's. The rest of subsection 1, which is the same both in drafts 2 and 2A, applies to our review of this at the previous meeting. Are there any further objections to the language in subsection 1?
We are adding entertainment on entertainment, yes.
Now, I'm wondering, just as a grammatical matter, we have the supplying of food, lodging, or other accommodations in hotels, restaurants, or elsewhere, and then we put in comma, entertainment, comma, and then we say the supplying of equipment for use, comma, and then we say the supplying of commodities of the public utility nature, such as gas, electricity, steam, and water. I'm wondering, in order to be consistent, if we shouldn't have supplying of entertainment, rather than just entertainment. Look kind of naked, just sticking entertainment in there. I mean, entertainment belongs there. The phraseology is what I question.
I wonder if you're a gatecrasher and you avoid by deception or some other means, you take a taker, but there's no entertainment underway yet.
front. There's no one supplying of labor, supplying of professional services.
Well, we put the supplying of food, lodging, or other accommodations in a cow's
ranch. Right, but after food, comma, entertainment, comma, lodging, or other.
Yeah. That thought did occur to me. I wonder if that doesn't unduly restrict it.
Well, you say, or elsewhere. It could be in a football stadium, or a restaurant, or a nightclub, or a tennis court. It could be any place.
Supplying food, lodging, entertainment, other accommodations, or elsewhere.
I suppose that maybe more difficult would be whether or not, say, a football game is what you would call entertainment.
Now, the Model Penal Code uses admission to exhibitions.
That's
more restrictive, I think, than entertainment.
I think it is. Well, you see, if your initial definition says services, thus is not limited to these, then you really have a catch-all that would include any kind of this
sort of thing.
This sort of thing. And you may not necessarily need to use entertainment. Other words that could denote some particular kind of service.
Well, go ahead.
I think it would be inconsistent if we put entertainment after communication services. Because we haven't, before that, used the word supplying of. Then we get down to food, and the reason we put supplying of there was so that it wouldn't get to the groceries.
Right. Yeah, I think it could more properly fit there. In this section, services includes but is not limited to labor, professional service, toll facilities, transportation, telephone or other communication service, entertainment, the supplying of food, lodging, or other accommodations in hotels, restaurants, or elsewhere, and then the supplying of equipment for use. I think that reads better.
Mm-hmm.
Any objections to that?
Would you think it'd be advisable to say admission to entertainment?
I notice that the Model Penal Code says admission to exhibitions.
That wouldn't be a service as such, would it?
Well, the reason I ask, I'm still stuck on this point of if the entertainment is not started, but you still crash the gate.
You're through the people.
Is there any, yeah, not all game.
Well, now here's some language.
Is there a loophole there?
Here's some language from
paragraph
number two. And they called it at that time under the Model Penal Code temporary deprivation or use of property. But they had a subsection called avoiding admission fees. And then went on to say, a person who without consent of the occupant or by deception or intimidation secures admission to premises without payment of the prescribed admission fee commits theft of the amount of such fee.
I think that's a little bit unwieldy.
I think entertainment covers the waterfront sufficiently.
So it does. Where did you want to put it?
After service.
Communication
service, comma, entertainment, comma. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Do we then approve subsection 1 as amended today?
Do we need to think about
who leaves? Well, Ed,
Subsection 1 is identical in the first two preliminary drafts today.
Oh, yeah. 2A. Well, okay. I agree with the subsection 1, 2A.
Sure. All right. Now, the next question then is whether now, as I understand it, subsection 2 is identical in drafts 2 and 2A also, and this is exactly as it was amended by us at the last meeting. Now, the only question that we had then was whether we were going to, whether we preferred your language in 2B, which goes on here at length, to the language which appeared in Michigan and Connecticut, which recited, which left out the business about control over facilities or equipment and said simply, a person commits theft if having control over the disposition of services of others to which he is not entitled and knowingly diverts those services to his own benefit or to the benefit of a third person not entitled thereto. Now,
and the reason I used that
the
longer version was it seemed to me that just the short definition or the short approach did not seem to cover the question of diverting of the equipment or the other property, say of a factory or a plant, where maybe you're not using, actually you're not using any of the employees, you're not using any of the services, but you're using the equipment or other facilities. That you would have control over, but you wouldn't have intent, you wouldn't have the right to use them for your own benefit.
Right.
And that was taken from New York.
Right.
Of course, New York had a case, and I cited that case to you in their commentary in the last meeting, and so they had a definite type of situation in mind that where they had a case that they weren't able to handle under their existing law.
Well, we did throw this around at length. I had some serious question in my mind. I don't think it hurts to leave it in. I'm personally satisfied with the language. I asked questions with regard to commercial or other substantial benefit, exactly what that means. Do the rest of you have any thoughts? Are you prepared to approve it as it appears?
I wonder what other substantial benefit does mean.
Any commentary on that?
No, there isn't. My thinking is this, the reason New York used that language is that they're trying to make it clear that this isn't intended to make it criminal to use someone's equipment, say on a casual basis. Well, for example, I think some of the discussion we had at the last meeting brought up the question of whether or not, say, if a friend says, you know, I'll send over this lawnmower for you to use, something like that, where it's a de minimis type of situation.
In other words, if I go down to Gibbons and Reed on the Stadium Freeway and start up one of their cats and did figure eight with it and then run off, I might be guilty of taking and using that part joyriding, but I wouldn't be guilty of theft of services because it didn't.
Well, then I wonder, the reason I question, wouldn't it be more definite if you would leave out the words or other substantial?
Just limited to commercial?
With intent to derive a commercial benefit.
Well, is commercial then separate and apart from pecuniary? I mean, commercial implies something of
in
the business realm. Where the example that we had about the purchasing agent, or where these are personal benefits of a of monetary significance, could be as bad as a commercial.
Well, don't you imagine that, for instance, in New York, it may prevail conceivably, and if we'll say in Portland, more metropolitan area, where you have this semi-racketeering type of thing, that you've got the boss of a crew that's working as longshoreman or whatever it may be, and he says, now you guys want to keep your job. You come tonight and do such and such a thing. And this guy's getting a rake off on him someplace.
That's what
it's this kind of thing. If you guys want to keep your job, you come and do this. And he's doing it really on a commercial basis. It's a racketeering type of thing. They're not aiming at the purchasing agent who's got his hand behind him and so on. That's an intercompany.
The purchasing agent that can get it for you wholesale because it enhances prestige with you perhaps isn't really doing anything that he can be convicted under this, is he?
If the company doesn't like that kind of practice, they can stop it very quickly.
Yeah.
And they're not being robbed, but if some fellow is using his position as a foreman or a boss of some kind, which in the larger areas is easy to do.
Until it becomes on a commercial basis, it doesn't seem to be that obvious.
Yeah, or for example, say that you work for an accounting firm, or you're in charge of a section in an accounting firm, and you have a friend that wants to know what you think of a certain transaction, or have taken a look at his books, and you ask one of your employees, when you get time, take a look at this for me, let me know, and you don't charge this guy anything for this. You're using this individual to do this, and probably it's not the thing to do, but I don't think it would be criminal under this language here, because I don't think that the individual, the actor, would be deriving any substantial benefit. Although the third person might be deriving some benefit, it's questionable, I would think, whether there would be a substantial benefit to that.
I think
Justice Sloan's correct. If that's what they're driving at, the big scale type of operation.
I think that the greatest responsibility that we have in drafting these new statutes is to avoid, wherever possible, the ambiguities such as exist here by the use of other substantial.
Yeah.
Because this would give rise to an immediate appeal, and I just think that if we want to clean up the code, I think
we understand what we're talking.
I think so. And so, with that in mind, I would move that we strike or other substantial.
Okay.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Now, with intent to derive a commercial benefit for himself or a third person. Now, at that juncture, is there any... In Connecticut, they use "or a third person not entitled thereto." Is that self-explanatory, or is it needed here? The insertion of the words "not entitled," having control over labor or business, commercial, or industrial equipment or facilities to another person, knowing that he is not entitled to the use thereof, and with the intent to derive a commercial benefit for himself, or a third person not entitled thereto, he uses or diverts.
I think it is this.
Not entitled thereto, comma. Now, all in favor, you agree with that, Ian?
Yes. Yes. To be used in the word a third person in the next line, then? The use or the verbs to the use of himself or such third person. Such. And we've gone down here to any third person.
Any third person. Do we use the expression any third person?
No, but I'm wondering if we should use.
I see what you mean.
By that insertion to a third person not entitled thereto, then when we come down to using that word next, we just have any whole third person. A third person?
Yeah, I see what you mean. That's fine. Knowing it's not entitled to the person to write a commercial paper himself, a third person. He uses or diverts. Is it conceivable that he could divert the use of the equipment to a party who would be separate and apart from the party that derives the benefit from it? With intent to derive a commercial benefit for himself or a third person, that's A. He uses or diverts the equipment to another person. B. That conceivable.
Third person. Yeah. Yeah, that's possible. Third person not entitled thereto. Yeah.
Maybe put the words "not entitled thereto" after that next third person. Yeah, on the next line.
Just comparing the language to these other sections, these other codes.
What's the essence of the crime? Deriving of the benefit or the diverting of the use?
He would have to have the intent to derive the benefit when he...
To derive the benefit for himself or somebody else.
Use the words.
The intent to derive the benefit for himself or somebody else is not entitled to it. He uses or diverts. Labor, equipment, or facilities himself. I frankly don't know. I'm a little bit having control over a personal misstep to have control over labor. Not entitled to such labor, equipment, or facilities. think you have to have it in twice.
Now, the way we had it originally was the New York version. Now, the Model Penal Code, with the amendment that was suggested before, but the Model Penal Code seems a little neater when you look at it.
Right.
A person commits theft if having control over the disposition of services, and we could conform that to over labor or business, commercial, industrial equipment or facilities of others.
What number is that?
223.7. To which he is not entitled, he knowingly diverts such services to his own benefit or to the benefit of another not entitled thereto. That's cleaner, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then you eliminated this problem of, well, what kind of a third person are you talking about? Are you talking about the one that he intended to, are you talking about the same third person that he intended to derive a substantial benefit for, or are you talking about a different third person? I think.
Right. Now, how are you going to say that? Starting with the subparagraph B. The person commits theft if what? Having control over what?
The disposition of.
Of services.
Having
control over the disposition of
labor or other business, commercial, or of business, commercial, or industrial equipment or facilities of another,
right,
to which he is not entitled.
Yeah, that's better. Having control over and insert the disposition of, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Labor. Come on.
Or
business?
Yes, business.
Commercial or industrial equipment or facilities of another, and delete person, comma, to which he is not entitled.
Yes.
Deleting knowing that he.
Here.
To which he is not. And delete, knowing that he is not entitled to use their, to which he is not entitled, comma. Go ahead, Don.
See, and with intent to derive a commercial benefit for himself or a third person. Not entitled thereto.
Yeah. You're right back where we were. Aren't you?
I had it there.
Well, I think the way you have it, I think the way you...
Maybe we need to take the not entitled thereto out of there.
You say, having control over the disposition of labor, or of business, commercial, or industrial equipment, or facilities of another to which he is not entitled, he diverts such such services. I think in order to be consistent, we have to say, services, equipment, or facilities to his own benefit or to the benefit of another not entitled thereto. Isn't that what you suggested initially?
Mm-hmm.
Let me read that again. Now, having control over the disposition of labor or of business, commercial, or industrial equipment or facilities of another to which he is not entitled, he diverts such services, equipment, or facilities, and that could be labor, facility, or equipment or facilities, to his own benefit or to the benefit of another not entitled thereto.
But we've dropped our language, our intent language. I don't know if that's good or not. Certainly,
yeah, we got to have an intent.
Did you have to divert to such a labor?
No,
I was just
thinking. Divert's the same.
I think the essence of this crime is I was going to say that I thought the essence of the crime was the intent to derive a commercial benefit, and with that in mind, one not entitled thereto is sufficient.
The only trouble now with that language that we've just been suggesting is it seems to me the only trouble with the Model Penal Code version is that they don't have any fraudulent intent set forth. They use knowing, but knowingly diverts. You could, seems to me, you could knowingly divert the services to his own benefit.
The person who's mad, if there's no other disposition on labor, and the person whose son isn't another, he uses or diverts to the use of himself or a third person not entitled thereto such labor equipment or facilities with the intent to derive a commercial benefit for himself or such third person.
I'm inclined to think that's better.
Don't know if I can say it again.
Well, you're going to have to, because I can't write it quite that.
There's one thing in this draft 2B, the New York thing, that it seems to me like is essential. It's where they say retaining or having control over labor in the employ of another person.
We kicked that around last time and came up with some objection to it, didn't we?
Well, the way it's worded in the draft 2, for instance, is you say having control over labor of another person.
Yeah.
Now, are you talking about the labor of the laborer, or are you talking about his laborer's obligations or his employment status to another person?
I think that's a good observation.
But that was one of the specific recommendations last time, to make out that language.
Yeah, we were talking about a situation where somebody might not be in the country for a normal day in prison.
Yes. What I was wondering is, this really off the top of the head, just suggesting that conceivably this particular section could be submitted to the legislative council or definitely to someone with the idea of what you're aiming to prohibit and make it a crime to do, and see what they could come up with a phrase.
To refresh our recollection, discussing this business of the employee of another coming from his minutes, Mr. Spaulding questioned whether the draft would extend to someone who was not in the employ of another person. The employee might be working for a foreman, but would not actually be in his employ. Burns noted that the model penal code solved the problem by saying having control over the disposition and services of others. Ms. Buffet suggested that any employee be deleted, and after further discussion, Mr. Spaulding so moved, and the motion unanimously carried. Now, are you suggesting, Justice Sloan, that we refer to legislative counsel in an effort to see if they can, if there's a loophole there?
Well, to the more I sit here and study this particular thing and back and forth to this, for instance, New York section,
which incidentally, Justice Sloan, was the language of my first draft. I had that New York language in there, in the employ.
It's obvious that as in Connecticut, the model penal code in New York and so on, they were aiming to stop something that the kind of conduct that justifies being classified as a crime, and not that which may be a kind of a petty nuisance to the boss's car or truck or facilities on the weekend or something. And how do you go about limiting so that you don't make it so all-inclusive?
And that's what we were trying to limit it by the
right.
Language of
another,
of the intent to derive a commercial or substantial benefit.
Well, see, take this phrase, for instance, then, knowing that he is not entitled to the use thereof. Well, if he's the boss in charge of a construction crew, by example, and during employment hours, he certainly does have, is entitled to the use of the bulldozer, ditch digger, whatever it may be. It's in the non-employment hours or some other time that he's using it. Or, of course, he could use it during employment hours. It's the off-the-job type of thing, but how you go about proving that this culprit didn't know that he wasn't entitled to the use of it as of some given time.
Well, now wait a minute.
See, he could do it on the job, actually. He could
You're suggesting that there's a more meaningful distinction, or that there is a meaningful distinction between over labor in the employ of another as opposed to having control over labor or business, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, of another.
Right. Well, I was trying to think of a kind of a situation where, say, in highway construction, where somebody pulls a boom who is responsible for paying for it, and he goes to the foreman of the crew, and either by bribery or some other form of inducement, induces him to do the work correctly, but not turn in the time for it.
Where is the benefit by requiring him to prove that this laborer is actually an employee of somebody?
Wouldn't be. No, my point was, in the way it's worded, Bruce, was that where it says having control over labor of another person. Now, labor of another person is normally the man, he has control over the labor of that person.
Yeah.
Now, you're not talking about that person, you're talking about labor that is either employed by some other person or some other person has the authority over the control over it, as the prison labor.
There is a distinction.
Yeah, it isn't when you think about it that way, this doesn't make very good sense.
No.
I think that what maybe they're getting at is it's not me having control over the way we have it now in preliminary draft two, the way we amended it. It relates to me having control over my own employees.
Yeah.
But that they're getting at the strong arm tactic or the racketeering situation where so and so comes in and says to your employees, "For you do thus or so, huh?" Is that through some guys I have control over people that are in your employ? Now you questioned this before, and we agree that the question whether it would extend to someone who wasn't in the employ. Yeah. But and it wouldn't, would it? It would only be limited. Now how do I get control over one of your employees?
Or perhaps a labor boss.
And he's supposed to be working on my house, and you tell him to go over and work on a building that he's constructing for his own commercial benefit.
Or you run a hiring.
And I'm paying him.
Yes. Supposedly your labor boss is a muscle. You run a hiring call and you say if you wanted to work on these here, you did some off hours work my direction.
Now, let's juxtapose that and tell me if by limiting it to labor in the employ of another, we unduly restrict ourselves and don't bring within the scope of this the sanction where maybe it's needed otherwise.
As a prison labor or...
Well, why don't we accomplish it by just saying labor of another? I don't care whether he's employed by somebody else. If so, you have control over some other person's labor and you divert that. With intent to derive a commercial benefit by so doing.